Welcome to HealthTech Matters, a podcast where we talk to healthcare startup founders, product managers, and designers, and discuss current trends in building great healthcare products. I'm your host, Mary, and today we're going to talk about employee mental health, six pillars of well-being, and healthy company culture. Today our guest is James Dashwood, Head of Well-being at Betterspace, an employee well-being platform. Stay tuned! Could you please tell me more about your background and how you got into the Betterspace?
Thanks, Mary. Really nice to be talking to you today. My well-being journey, so to speak, started about 6 years ago when I entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I got sober from drink and drugs. I was 30 years old and my life had become difficult. I felt like I was not living the life that I wanted to, and I was beset with anxiety and depression. My health was in danger, both mental and physical. I knew that I had to do something about it, and it wasn't the first time I tried to get sober. I've been trying for a couple of years, but this was the time that it stuck. Alongside that, I've discovered lots of other things to feel good and stay connected, and those things include exercising, so yoga and Pilates, and I've really discovered the link between exercise and mental health. Understanding the importance of sleep, for me it was really important to look at my past. I got therapy, I saw a trauma therapist, I've been on various retreats, I've done knitting, I've tried colouring in, I've been wild swimming. If I thought it might help, I've tried it. That journey led me to starting my own company, which was a on-demand personal trainer app, which included personal trainers, yoga teachers, nutritionists, and it was up and running for about a year. We had around 10,000 users, we raised a bit of money, but unfortunately it got to the stage where we couldn't generate sufficient growth to go and raise the next round of investment. By that time, I knew that the area that I wanted to work in was well-being. And I saw on a company called AngelList, which I previously used to hire employees, that there was a company called Betterspace advertising for what the role was. It sounded exactly like the company and job I would have. It was a marketplace for mental health resources, and I knew a lot about that thing, having done a lot of it. And so I joined in January 2019.
It might make sense to give some background about the Betterspace for the listeners.
So Betterspace is a platform for employee well-being, and it takes the form of a marketplace of resources. So we curate directories of resources bespoke for companies of between 300, 400, 500 different resources that have all been curated and put through a rigorous QA process and selected based on their efficacy for well-being. And they can range from free things, so podcasts and TED Talks and free courses, up to quite expensive things. So we have organic mattresses, and we have a canoe building course, and we have home gym equipment. So there's a real range of products on offer, from in online therapy to knitting kits. It speaks to the idea that I was talking about before, that well-being is intensely personal, and what works for you might not necessarily work for me. Even if we wanted to do the same thing, even if we both knew that we wanted to do yoga, you might want to do yoga at home and I might want to do it at the gym. So even if we wanted both to do meditation, you might want to subscribe to Headspace and I might want to subscribe to 10% Happier. You might want to do it without an app and you just might want to buy a meditation cushion or a singing bowl. I might want to do an online course. So there's a world out there of resources for people's well-being, and it's quite daunting. When I first started on this process, it felt very daunting to confront every single thing that was out there. And this was 6 years ago, and it's only grown since then. Even just the number of apps on the App Store to do with mental health, it's over 10,000 now. So Betterspace, we hope, goes some way to addressing this feeling of being overwhelmed in the face of potentially limitless resources. And we help guide you towards using a well-being assessment and algorithms, guide you towards things that we think are going to work for you.
So you joined the team right at the beginning. How many people are there right now?
I'm going to say between 15 and 20. I don't actually know because we're hiring, it seems like, every week.
What do you think is causing this change of awareness of the importance of well-being in the workspace, actually?
Very good question.
So before we also were thinking about making our employees happier, but right now people are investing in it like crazy. Yeah. Especially the last years?
Yeah, it's a really good question. On the one hand, it's a wider, not just in the workplace and among employees and the business community, it's a wider understanding of the importance of mental health and that we all have mental health. We all struggle from time to time. It's an opening up of the conversation around mental health. Again, it's not just about discussing when we have bad mental health. Of course, that's important to talk about and to bring that out of the shadows. But it's a discussion of the fact that mental health is with us all the time, every day. It's how we think, it's how we feel, it's how we interact with other people. So once you've set that as the baseline, then it becomes impossible to turn away from. And it then becomes something that businesses really need to look at and the employees start talking about. And they feel like, if my business isn't talking about this and isn't understanding me and giving me what I need, then why should I be working for this company? Because the one down the road does. So you have this groundswell of understanding. Increasingly also, there's the business case to be made for it, right? So businesses are beginning to understand that the more they look after their employees, and not just in a token way, by giving them a gym membership here or an EAP there, or having one charitable day a year, but really baking this into the identity of their company, their profits increase and they see less absenteeism and there's greater cohesiveness and harmony within their team. A happy place to work, a more productive place to work and therefore a more profitable place to work. And it reminds me somewhat of the fact that the business community and large corporations are beginning to take the green initiative extremely seriously. Investors are turning away from fossil fuels and starting to invest quite heavily in green energy, and both of these issues seem to be twinned in quite an odd way, whereby people are beginning to recognize the business case of both things. Now it goes without saying that if you're an investor, you invest in things that are good for the planet, not just because it's the right thing to do, but also because it's going to be good for the bottom line. And the same with mental health, not just because it's the right thing to do, but also because it's the profitable thing to do. When these two things align, it becomes absolutely obvious what's the correct course of action.
I totally agree. This growing awareness of the importance of mental health, it's about some economies. So if you are talking about, let's say, China, Japan, and so on, in these economies, people are not really concerned about mental health, especially in Japan, for example. It's such an absurd situation where people are just dying at work and their bosses don't really care about mental health, about any health at all, which is quite strange to me because on the one hand, it's East and they should be more concerned about their mental health, about their physical well-being. But on the other hand, in Japan especially, they don't really care about it, in corporations, I mean. So this is very interesting that in Europe, these sprouts are coming. And maybe in some time in Asia, we will have the same situation. It's very interesting because the contrast is super big.
And you're right. And I don't know enough about the culture in Japan to make any observations really about why that should be different. But there is one thing in Japan that I'll just quickly mention and it was the fact that they have something available to stressed out business people on their equivalent of the NHS, so their public health service, which allows people to go and do what they call a forest bath. So they go into nature and particularly into forests and with a guide who will very often play a flute while they sit and take in the nature and the forest, for me, is just so enlightened. And this isn't a new thing that they put in. They've had it for a while. It's surprising that you have a country that understands the link between well-being and nature and the need for humans to get out and experience something bigger than themselves, to connect with nature, to contrast that with the image of the stressed out salary man who, as you say, dies at their desk because they're being worked crazy hours in the competition. It doesn't sit. So it seems inevitable that this culture will change. It has to change. Once people understand that you don't get the best out of people by pushing them to that degree, it's a balance, right? That some element of stress is good for people. It can push you to your best performance and it can take you to the next level. But at the same time, we have to be able to manage that stress, and there has to be some release. If that never comes, that release, and we don't have that support network, it's very destructive.
It's also about creating a methodology, how you actually can manage your mental health. Because, for example, I can understand that mental health is important, but let's say at school, nobody tells you that mental health is important and what actually mental health is. So developing this methodology and making it popular, let's say, is quite important. So you actually have methodology in the better space. Could you please tell a bit more about it?
Yes, so it's pretty simple, and this is by design. It is based on what we call the six pillars of well-being, which was developed by our chief medical officer, Dr. Ian Jordan. The premise is that there are six main areas of our lives that contribute to our well-being. If all of these are in some balance, then we're going to be feeling okay. And those six pillars are sleep, stress management, social connections, helping others, meaningful activity, and exercise. Some of those we all know they're going to be good for your well-being. So stress management seems pretty obvious. Exercise, people are beginning to understand that we need to exercise. The body is built to move. If we don't move, we become unhappy. But there are then other things perhaps that aren't so obvious. We all know that we feel good when we help other people, and you get that glow of altruism that comes from things that are not self-centered, and that momentary release from the ego when we're thinking about other people is great. Self-obsession and rumination and thinking about ourselves are very often the cause of our anxieties and depression. Then there's meaningful activity, and it's one of the more opaque areas. Like, people often ask, what does that mean? In the context of Better Space, we're talking about things that give you a sense of mastery, things that you learn, skills that you learn. It can be hobbies as well, things that you can really put your heart and your soul into, and things that just make your heart light up with joy when you do them. It could be cooking, it could be playing the piano, it could be learning a language. There's a term that a psychologist called Csikszentmihalyi came up with called flow, and that involves the process when you're doing something that is challenging but not too challenging that it's beyond you, but it's constantly pushing you. And when you get to that perfect level of being totally immersed in something that is just hard enough to focus your full attention, you enter this state called flow, where you're totally immersed in what you're doing. And I feel like the meaningful activity pillar, at least in the context of Better Space, can be understood by things that help you enter that state of flow.
Mm-hmm. And also, you mentioned altruism or helping others. So how do you help people work with this part?
Okay, good. It's a good question. And it's an area that we for sure can improve on. So interestingly for us, helping others is very often the pillar that people want to improve the most and they score themselves the lowest on. For Better Space, one of our goals and one of my goals as head of wellbeing is to really try and help people not only understand how they can do this and why it's important, but to enable them to do that. So some of the resources that we have on our wellbeing marketplace, things that allow you to volunteer. So we list lots of different charities and things that also allow you to donate. We are still coming up with ways to make it really easy for people to volunteer, because historically, especially within companies, it hasn't been the easiest thing to do to volunteer. You've got to find a time and it's got to be at the right place and it's got to work out on your schedule and you may have to find a whole group of people to do it. So one of the challenges for Better Space going forward is to really integrate volunteering within our platform and within the companies that we work with, and also to make donations feel really meaningful, to help people understand where their money's going, what it's contributing towards, and also to improve people's literacy and to help them understand why it's important to help others, and to give them a taste of that feeling that you get when you do good and you contribute to your community, but making it as easy as possible to do that.
And regarding the social connections you mentioned before, how can people use a platform to actually benefit from social connections, especially in the light of COVID?
One of the things that we hope to do with Better Space is one, back to this point about mental health literacy. So the fact that we're explaining to people why, and just the fact that social connections are important, is one thing. That's great. And we can explain why. But the other thing is facilitating ways in which people can connect. In a world, we've curated various different resources to allow people to connect both with people from without their company. We hope going forwards, with one of the things about Better Space is that it's going to allow employees from within the same company to better connect with each other. We're pretty early stage. What form that's going to take? It could take the form of forums on the platform, so people can discuss in various different groups issues that matter to them or goals they have, or whether it's recommending friends of yours or in your company particular resources. So I read a book that you might like and I share that with you. We then start a conversation about that. I may invite you to join me in an online yoga class, and in time, a real yoga class or a lecture or whatever it might be. So there's two things around this. Is one, we want to get a conversation going within the company and allow people to talk about these things in a way that maybe they wouldn't before. Once you start talking about mental health as a really holistic thing, and you include things like getting a massage and going for a run and walking in the park as part of the conversation around mental health, it becomes much easier to talk about mental health, because you're not talking about anything particularly worrying or troublesome, or you may feel personal. It's about, I got a massage, I felt great, you should do it. And these are things that can lead to greater, more in-depth discussion. And you might then the next time say, I was feeling really anxious, actually, I had a massage and that feeling of another human touching me, I felt some connection and it made me feel better. And the other thing is giving people resources to connect with people that they may not have known existed. So you can play games online, Among Us being an example. One of the main issues of the modern day is social media and the fact that it's the illusion of connection. It's because I'm on Instagram and I have 1,000 followers and I post a photo and I get all of these responses that I'm really connecting with people, when in fact it can be quite isolating. I don't want to get on my soapbox and talk about the evils of social media here. In some ways, I'm sure that if used, without sounding condescending, appropriately, social media can be incredibly connecting. I'm sure it can. There are definitely good bits about it, but I feel like it can also be very dangerous.
Right. And in mind, what are the best examples of healthy company culture? So what do these companies do?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I'm going to name any specifically. If I don't work at a particular company, I couldn't comment on that, but I'll give you some ideas. We did a talk at Better Space recently where someone came in and took us through a course that Google had developed. We learned that Google have done a lot of research into what makes their teams within Google really great. What are the factors that make their most productive teams the most productive? And the feature they found that was the most important to a team's success, productivity, and all the rest of it was psychological safety. And by that, they mean the feeling that within that team, anyone from the top to the bottom can say what they like without fear of being reprimanded, being told that they're an idiot, that they're too junior to be questioning the leadership. So that the feeling that they can be respected and they can say what they like without being fired or made to feel silly or any of the rest of it. And After that meeting, the person who was doing the talk, who was called Gareth, emailed me to say that he felt that at Better Space there was a high degree of psychological safety. And this isn't designed to tell everyone that Better Space is the best company to work at. I don't know if it's the best company to work at, but I do feel that everyone at Better Space feels that they can say pretty much whatever they like. So they can give feedback about the product, they can give feedback to the CEO about the direction the company's going without any fear of being told that to mind their own business. And that psychological safety comes from leadership. It comes from people being open and honest and encouraging everyone in the team to be honest about that. So that to me makes an awful lot of sense in terms of just feeling comfortable at a company and feeling like you have agency within that company and not trapped within your own small remit and job description. So if I was to say anything on this subject, it would just be to echo that if you're in a job where you feel like you can say something to your boss that he might not necessarily want to hear, but you're not going to get in trouble for it, then you're in a pretty good place to work. If you feel like you can never say anything, despite the fact that you really feel very strongly about it, then that might not be the best place to work. Maybe this is a generalization, but it's probably my feelings on the subject.
I totally agree, but we also have colleagues and stressful situations between colleagues. So what one advice would you give to a manager to reduce the number of employees who are affected by mental health issues like stresses while working with their colleagues? So the boss is great, but some of the colleagues are toxic, or maybe there are some other issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Whenever there are lots of people together, there will be conflict. That's just the nature of being a human. Gosh, if I was a manager, it's really important for people to try to empathize. That's the key here. It's that you never know what someone else is going through at any particular time. It's very often a lack of communication. I feel like if we always knew the other person's story and not just saw them as that annoying manager or that person from accounts who's always on my case, if we actually knew that this was a person with their own hopes and dreams, with maybe a son who's 16 and who's gone a bit off the rails and that's causing him stress, or he's arguing with his wife and he's not sleeping well, he's got financial issues and he deals with his own anxiety and he's worried about this and that. If we understood him in his totality as an actual human being, then maybe we would judge him less harshly and we could have more compassion. I feel like that sense of compassion for others, if that could run through the DNA of an entire company, then that would be a really great company.
That's a great recommendation, but building this compassion, patience sometimes is very hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard, even in your family, not talking about a company or corporation where there are so many people and they're too different sometimes. So where should a person focus on to try to start this compassion building in themselves?
Well, it's a good question. The answer is always with yourself. So I feel like it's difficult to have compassion for other people if you don't have compassion for yourself. It's difficult to love other people if you don't love yourself. So I always look at yourself first. When I'm judging other people and when I'm angry with other people and when I'm short-tempered, it's always me that I need to look at first. And the more we blame other people for our own moods and our own situations, further from the truth we are, because it always starts with us. So if you want to be compassionate with yourself. If you want to be kind to yourself. And naturally, you will start to become with others. And as to what the quick fix is in a company to build this in, well, there isn't one. If a company hasn't been built from the ground up with these things in mind, then it's quite difficult to retrofit it. But of course, there are things you can do. And at Better Space, by focusing on the individual, and hopefully getting the individual to a place where they understand what works for them, what doesn't work for them, the importance of social connections. If they wanted to learn about self-compassion or just compassion in general, there is a specific section of Better Space where they can find out about that stuff. Then we hope that gradually this thing seeps into the culture of the workplace. But again, I would say that it starts from the top. If you have an enlightened leadership who strongly believes in all these things, the chances are that if they're going to come to Better Space and spend the company's money to get Better Space for their company, they are going to be an enlightened company in this regard. So they're already starting from a pretty good place.
I would recommend a book which is four agreements. One of the agreements is exactly the same thing that you told me, which is that everything that you are talking about, how you feel, it's all about you, and there is nothing to do with the other person or the environment. One thing that worries me a bit is that there are so many products for corporations and they are buying these products, but then employees are not using them. So how do you engage with users to start using the Better Space and not just understand that, okay, I have this one, but I'll try it the next week, the next month, and then never trying it. So how do you do that?
Well, it's a good question. One of the principal ways in which employees are engaged is that they are very often given a well-being budget by their company. Obviously, this is a massive driver of engagement. If you're given something for free, especially money, the chances are that you're gonna use that money. And the challenge of Better Space is going to be working out how we can maintain very high engagement levels with employees without them being given a well-being budget to spend on our platform. That may come from being able to get sufficient discounts on things. But what I would say is that we don't want to become just a Amazon for well-being. We don't just want to be a place where you go to shop for things. So that becomes then a question of what content, what form can Better Space take to really engage people where it's not just a transactional thing. In terms of finding people things that are going to work for them long term, again, that's really up to the individual. And a lot of this is just about trying things and experimenting with things. For instance, for me, I know that there's four or five things that I need to do every week for me to feel good. It's about finding that routine for you that works. And the other things that you might find on Better Space, the books or the knitting kits or the drawing classes or the pottery classes, are things that you may not do every week, but they may just be things that give you a bit of joy. And they may be things that you do with friends, or they may be just the little sparks that enhance your life. But it's the core things that you do every week, every day, that are the things that keep you feeling good. I can talk only from my own experience about those things, and it's taken a while for me to find them. But it involves meditating, exercise, praying, calling a friend, having a walk outside in nature, reading. These are all things that I do, or I try and do every day. I know when I do them, I feel good. The other things I do, the extra bits, if you like, just add to the overall picture. So what I would suggest is that you find what works for you on a daily or weekly basis. Find a routine and stick to it. That's the best advice I could give.
And speaking about the routines, how did you build your habit, let's say, habit of meditating or habit of reading or walking outside?
So I'd be lying if I said I had a really strong habit of meditating, but it's getting that way. And it's not like I decided to meditate and I now meditate for half an hour every day without fail. It hasn't, for me, that's not been my story. I must have used five different meditation apps. I've read probably 100 books on Buddhism and meditation, and I've struggled over years to make it a habit, and it's still not quite a habit. But with every year, I do it more and more. So now I'm meditating very often for half an hour a day. I don't do it every day, but it's probably four or five times a week. How I did that is just by trying and recognizing how much better I feel when I do it and just going back to it. I'm reading a book by someone called Charlotte Joko Beck, who was an American lady who became a Zen Buddhist. And her books on Zen Buddhism are amazing. So I read things and I get inspired and I want to get a taste of it. And so I start doing it. The same with walking outside or exercising. The habit only comes when I see the benefit from it. Whatever it is, if it's knitting or if it's cooking or if it's playing the piano or if it's singing in the shower, there are things that we can all do that help us to feel good and help us to feel connected. And they're the things to really try and build into your life. And if something isn't working for you, don't waste time trying to build it into your life, because you're never going to create habits of things that don't work for you.
And I have a few fast-fire questions, so I will ask you, and I won't be commenting. Okay. So the first question is, what is the future of mental health products?
Less, but better. So there are currently just far too many apps. There was a gold rush when people thought that they were going to be the new Headspace or Calm. So there are far too many, but there are going to be less, and they will be better as we begin to understand the digital interventions that really work. Because currently, it's slightly like the Wild West out there. There's a lot of people making a lot of claims, not just for digital interventions, but products, and it's quality over quantity.
What are you skeptical about in healthcare?
A lot. The promise of quick and easy happiness. It's not quick necessarily, and it's very often not easy.
If you could write anything on a billboard, what would that be?
That is a really good question, one that I haven't heard before. But it's going to be something really cheesy, but just maybe be kind to each other.
And the last question is, what is the future of healthcare? The one technology you believe will change how we experience healthcare systems at the moment, or just experience our well-being?
The one technology. I don't know. I really don't know. But it's really key to not get too hung up on technology, especially with mental health. Like, we already know the tools to happiness. Buddhists have known for thousands of years. We don't need phones, we don't need apps, we don't need MRI scans, we don't need all of this stuff. It's really interesting, but we have everything we need inside us for happiness.
It's also technology of working with yourself. That's it. Was my questions.
Thank you very much, Maria.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk to you.